Hey, how's it going? If you're new here, welcome. Something Shifted is about identity after interruption, about who we become after the life quake hits and changes everything. Here we share heartfelt stories that won't make the highlights reel. We explore the discomfort of recalibration and how we might find unexpected joy when life has other plans for us. And I think you're going to like it here. You can find more episodes and ways to support the podcast at somethingshifted.co.za. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Today's story belongs to Nicole.
As a child, you don't actually have to be told something's a secret for that shame to sort of coach you. And you to know that if you repeat it outside the house, that would be bad not only for you, but for the entire family.
That's next, right after this. If you believe that rest is a luxury, we can't be friends. Real change is exhausting. And even when your mind is ready, your body has kept the score, so it can't keep up with proper recovery. Which is why I've started taking Solol's magnesium glycinate tablets. It helps with muscle energy, nervous system support, and honestly, I'm feeling a lot less fatigued. You can learn more about Solol and their full range of supplements for healthy aging on Solol, solal.co.za. As we were making this season of Something Shifted, we put together a music playlist for ourselves. It's packed with songs that make me and Rue feel a little less lonely and a lot more empowered. One of our favorite refrains to belt out loud when things get hairy is Taylor Swift's I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. I'm a real tough kid, I can handle my shit. Anyways, that's the thing about lifequakes. Surviving them makes you tough. And when other people see your toughness and admire it, they respond with, you're so resilient and I don't know how you do it.
Every time I had an interview, I would get, firstly, why did you choose true crime? And secondly, doesn't this affect you negatively psychologically? How do you sleep at night?
If you recognize this voice, it's probably because you listen to True Crime South Africa. That's Nicole's podcast. Nicole is a storyteller and a story crafter. And in addition to her podcast, she's authored 4 books on true crime, including Samurai Sword Murder, the Morne Haramsa story, and Sizzlers. Plus, she creates companion podcasts for true crime shows and movies. Nicole's livelihood is crafting stories out of dark material. So naturally, many people want to know, how does she sleep at night?
And the first few times people said that, it was like such a strange question to me because I just thought to myself, what do you mean? And that really started to weigh on my mind. At one point I thought to myself, am I actually like a little bit psychopathic? Why am I able to do this? I mean, what I do is pretty taxing. It's really horrible stuff every single day.
It's easy to assume that Nicole must be a real tough kid, considering that she's able to deal with true crime stories day in and day out. And that was partly what Nicole told herself, part of how she made sense of her own story.
Some of it was character, sure. Part of it that was character was the part that had taken me down a relatively straight and narrow road rather than the road I could have taken from where I started.
So let's go where Nicole started. Nicole's story begins with a mom and a dad and 2 older siblings, 10 and 12 years older, to be exact.
I'm a lot lamiki, or a mistake, as my mom likes to quite bluntly say. I clearly remember moving through even my young childhood knowing that she was pretty much all mothered out by the time I came along. My older sibling had been a relatively well-behaved child, the middle sibling not so much.
And Nicole was about 6 years old when her parents divorced.
You know, almost all of my family members had a substance use disorder to some extent. And my dad was certainly on the further end of that, alcoholic as well as using drugs at times. My dad was very much a phantom, and had moved sort of in and out of my life and been on the periphery at times, other times disappeared for years at a time.
As Nicole was growing up, she started making sense of the world around her, and a couple of things became very clear. Firstly, some stories are not to be shared outside the family.
And that idea of we keep things behind closed doors was certainly very well drummed into me by that point. I think it's interesting, as a child, you don't actually have to be told something's a secret for that shame to, or that implied shame rather, to sort of coach you and you to know that if you repeat it outside the house, that would be bad not only for you, but for the entire family. And I think it's that insidiousness of secrets that you can almost be born sensing that environment and knowing that you have to play a role in keeping those secrets going, for your own survival, because that's really what it is when you're a child.
Secondly, Nicole figured out that she would have to be the hero of her own story. It felt like her mom was just going through the motions by the time she had to parent Nicole. Sure, Nicole was loved, but it was as if there was just enough mom left to meet her physical needs and nothing more.
So I certainly didn't feel angry at her for that. It was just one of those things I sort of accepted that I would have to sort myself out. I grew up understanding that I was not to be another problem. And that was really my main goal in life.
So that was the narrative that Nicole was handed. Some things are not to be shared. You're on your own, kid. And you better handle your shit. And that's the story Nicole continued to live out.
I was so excited to go to school. I think because it was going to take me out of the house, but also because I'd sort of realized I could probably do this pretty well. And it was something that I could add to the family that would be positive. I could be this hope for the family. School was not difficult for me. It was an escape for me. So I did put a lot into it.
Nicole set out to be someone who wasn't a problem, who didn't need taking care of. And somehow, she thought this kind of person would be someone who listens to classical music.
Even though I didn't really like classical music, that it would somehow make me an elevated person. So I spent a lot of time listening to classical music and literally forcing myself to listen to this stuff. Spoiler alert, it did not make me an elevated human. It just made me a very annoyed human.
Nicole attended school in Boksburg on the East Rand of Gauteng, a city known for its mining and industrial sector. Nicole knew there were some things happening in her family that weren't great, but she was also aware of the same not-so-great things happening in the wider community. It was just the backdrop of her story.
Again, it wasn't a really weird thing for me to hear that a child had gone missing.
But when Nicole started high school, she actually knew the kid who'd gone missing. Ava, her friend's younger sister, was kidnapped. This happened just after six girls had gone missing in the late 80s, later confirmed to be abducted by Gert van Rooyen.
So as a 13-year-old, I thought, okay, girls go missing. But those girls were never found. So I think in my mind at that time, I thought, I don't know what I thought, you know, did they disappear into a bubble? Did they disappear into fresh air? Certainly never in a million years did my mind go to those girls are probably dead.
But in this case, sadly, 11-year-old Ava's lifeless body was found about 3 weeks after she'd gone missing.
I clearly remember this moment of thinking, but she's just a kid. I mean, I know people kill each other. I'd grown up in this violent family. I was no stranger to violence. You know, I'd seen injuries because of this violence. but my little, you know, young brain had not yet sort of adapted that to think that in the outside world there are big people who go after little people. Because, I mean, I guess thankfully none of the violence in my home had actually been directed at me. It had been between the adults, and I was sort of the onlooker. So at that moment, I realized there are really bad people out there who will do this to kids on purpose. And Ava's story really stuck with me throughout the years.
If you'd met Nicole at school, maybe sat next to her in class or traded sandwiches at break time, you probably wouldn't have guessed half her story. You might have noticed that Nicole was able to move on quickly when plans changed, but you wouldn't have known why she could adapt.
We moved a lot because basically my mom wouldn't pay the rent. So we would do like a midnight flip. And funny enough, I didn't like realize that that was what it was at the time. Thinking back, I realized, okay, that's why we used to move in the middle of the night.
At school, you would have seen a strong academic performer, normally within the top 10 of her grade, but you'd have no idea that she was up all night with a sick baby.
One of my siblings had a child, and they were not present for the first 2 years of that child's life. So really, from the age of 16, I became that child's caretaker when I was not at school. I mean, even when I was studying for my prelims, I was doing the midnight walk because she had an ear infection, and then going to school the next day and writing prelims.
Even as a teenager, Nicole could handle her and a lot of other people's shit. But sometimes those storylines, the secret stories from home and the I'm a real tough kid story, they'd collide and get tangled up together. Like in grade 10, when a head teacher pulled Nicole aside with some unsettling news.
And I thought I was in trouble. And she said to me, I just want to let you know, your mom has actually not paid your school fees since you started here. She'd just been sending me to school. And I had no clue. So the teacher said to me, but because you're such a good student, we are going to keep you here through to matric. It wasn't the greatest way to find out. But again, that reinforced for me that you're on your own. Yeah, I very much knew that that was, if I was going to not be what I'd witnessed, I had to do something differently.
So, dear listener, by now you may have come up with a reason as to why Nicole is able to sleep at night, even when she deals with dark true crime stories for a living. But it was only recently that Nicole found her own answer to that question. In her early 40s, Nicole had crafted a good story for herself. She was at the forefront of true crime podcasting in South Africa, and her career was going really well. She's given up on the classical music thing, and she rose above the circumstances she grew up in. And she's also only somewhat bothered by the fact that interviewers are curious about her sleep habits. Up until this point, Nicole had assumed that she could do what she does because she is naturally resilient.
I myself had wondered, how do police officers and pathologists see all these horrible things every day? But I thought it was a skill they learned, you know, where they just put things in boxes.
Sometimes the things that interrupt our identity are huge. They're seismic. You can't miss them. And sometimes they're small, a little less in your face, and very much in your ears, like a podcast episode.
And that was when what I say is probably the biggest quake so far, which if you listen to all the other quakes, it probably shouldn't be, but it really was when I was listening to a psychology podcast, and they mentioned this concept of compartmentalization.
Compartmentalization. The word itself should be broken up into three parts because it's so long.
The concept of compartmentalization is that you, when you are in an extremely emotional situation, you're able to put those emotions into a box file them away, deal with the job at hand, and then go back to those later without those emotions negatively impacting you. And then they said the thing that was really my sort of holy cow moment, which was this is not necessarily a learned skill that you can teach yourself. It is also a skill that children who grew up in traumatic environments subconsciously learn.
Nicole hit that skip back button to listen to this part of the podcast again and again.
Did I hear that correctly? And then just sitting there and going, that's what it is.
Resilience, that badge of honor other people give you, wasn't a badge at all. It was a survival strategy.
That's where I learned it. That is how I survived. And that's how I can do what I do without curling up in the corner and having a mental breakdown.
Nicole had become a real tough kid because she had to. She is resilient, not by choice, but by training.
The family environment that I grew up in, which was very inconsistent, very chaotic, there was domestic violence, substance use, and just a lot of very abnormal stuff being made normal. And I think when you grow up in an environment like that, it's almost like you're living in a seismic testing center. So you're what would be a giant 9 on the Richter scale to someone else was really felt just like a mini quake to me. You become very good at accepting really terrible things as totally normal and just part of your life. I can clearly recall at the age of 6, 10, around that age, thinking that it is my job to manage these adults' emotions so that it does not peak into violence.
Compartmentalization is not a character flaw. It's the mind's way of saying, if I don't split these complex things, the pressure will destroy me. It's what allowed me to entertain listeners during a primetime radio show when my little girl was lying in ICU. Radio Sean could ignore the boxes labeled ICU, Zoe has epilepsy, and special needs for roughly 3 hours a day while the microphone was on. So now Nicole had an answer for why she could work in true crime podcasting and still sleep at night. She wasn't a psychopath. She didn't lack empathy. She was just really good at boxing things up.
Now I understand why. But I still wouldn't tell people when they asked me the question, I would still give them the old answer. It's just natural resilience.
But there is a problem with being a good boxer-upper. If you keep those things separate for long enough, like a family box here, a school box there, you start creating separate stories for yourself about yourself. And even though you might open up about parts of your story here and there, there will be things you absolutely keep locked up. For Nicole, that was the box labeled Dad.
And as a survival strategy, you learn how to, I think, sort of mitigate the situation. You become a human buffer. So all the stories I told myself, I think, were how I fit into their story. Because at that point, that's how I saw myself, as that buffer piece between other people's stories. You know, if there's one thing that I remember from my mom growing up, it was her consistently saying, at least I don't have to worry about you. So again, I knew that. Even to today, I'm harder on myself than anyone else could ever be. Anything less than sort of 80% to me was a failure, which is certainly not healthy. But it made me not another problem at home. As much as I was hopeful for the future, it was a story of I've just got to survive today. I've just got to get through today, and then I can get through tomorrow.
So not only did Nicole need to unpack those separate boxes of difficult memories, she also had to untangle how those boxes shaped the stories she'd crafted for herself to just get through each day, so that she could work on having one story. The whole story, complex, nuanced, rich, detailed, where nothing had to be kept separate. Like the fact that she only saw her matric certificate for the first time in her 30s.
By the time I matriculated, they refused to give me my matric certificate because there was all that money outstanding. So the first time I saw my matric certificate was probably 6 years ago. I had to apply for it because I was doing a course, and it's the first time I'd ever needed it. So I said, oh, it got damaged. You know, you learn these coping mechanisms. It got damaged in the flood. Yeah, the flood of not having any money as a single mother.
Understanding the impact of long-term compartmentalization started Nicole down another path, that of looking at her younger self with kinder eyes.
Another thing that I was subconsciously taught growing up was that I couldn't rely on anyone else. Any time I had, I'd been let down. So I learned to... I formed friendships and relationships and, you know, I could certainly carry those along, but I was never all in it. And I still subconsciously knew that you've only got yourself, because that's what I've been taught.
As Nicole unpacked these boxes, she could gently hold the contents up to the light and understand them differently. Give them a different role in her story.
The smell of stale alcohol is a huge trigger to me, or alcohol on someone's breath. For a long time, I demonized alcohol as the problem, and I've come to realize it's not the problem. I would often, in my childhood, be taken, I mean, this was the 80s, early 90s, be taken into bars and sort of been put behind the counter. So my whichever family member was taking care of me at the time could drink, and I obviously wasn't supposed to be there. So I would have to sit behind the counter, and it's always sticky and like stale alcohol smell behind there. And then I've come to realize the sound, it's very weird. The sound of a key in a lock for a long time was very triggering to me. I would listen for whether the key would go directly into the lock or if it was sort of like all over the place, as a drunk person would be, because then I would know what the next few hours would hold.
It was through the unpacking of trauma and rewriting of stories that Nicole managed to figure out what it is that she needed to heal.
So I had to reteach myself, firstly, what a normal baseline interaction is like in a relationship. You know, I had been programmed to set my needs aside. I didn't have needs. I had to be who I had to be to keep the status quo. And I kept that throughout my life. And that was really, I think, one of the biggest realizations for me, was that in almost all of my, any kind of relationship, whether it was friendship, romantic, work relationships, I was always setting my needs at the door. And interestingly, I seemed to be almost subconsciously seeking out people who had a lot of problems.
Over the years, Nicole had learned that she couldn't rely on others. She'd been taught that she needed to take care of herself, and she was ready to do that from an early age. At 17, she moved out of her mother's house.
At that point, I could feel this sort of energy of, this is all becoming too much for what we've still very little shoulders. And I sensed, even though I had not, I think, consciously known that I was carrying all of this throughout my life, I think I sensed that once I got away from the situation, they would have to sort themselves out. And I would be free. And I had no idea what that looked like.
I can tell you what that looked like, in the beginning anyway, because Nicole says the freedom was intoxicating, and sometimes literally so. But Nicole finally didn't need to be a buffer to absorb everyone else's emotions. So there was a short stint where she explored and experimented, like most teenagers do. And it could have gone either way. But Nicole caught herself mid-freefall and, like a tough kid does, put herself on the path opposite to what she'd witnessed growing up. Let's take a moment to appreciate the importance of podcasts and how very meta this moment is. Right now, you're listening to a podcast about how a podcast helped a professional podcaster make sense of her own story. With the language of compartmentalization, Nicole had a new way of understanding herself.
I think also what started to shift was when I formed a friendship, which continues to this day, with a girl that I met at work. And her family are just fantastic people. That's when I started to realize, okay, hang on. Other families aren't like what yours were like. These people have the occasional arguments and stuff, because there was a time where I stayed with them for a little bit when I was between places. But it's not chaos. It's like a normal family. That's really when I started to figure out and have more exposure to other families, because I hadn't even had that during my childhood. So yeah, I think that's really when I started to realize that what I grew up with was very abnormal, and there were probably things that I still carried with me that I probably shouldn't. But the realization of how much that would shape my choices going forward in relationships, career, almost everything, really only came, I think, in my late 30s, early 40s.
Nicole was able to see how so many of the stories she needed to create to survive may have been helpful then, but they did not serve her well anymore.
I think a lot of it was around always needing to not being enough and needing to be more. That was certainly a pervasive theme. It would be something that I would have to come to terms with later in my life, was that nothing, no matter how good I was never going to fix my family, because it was never my job to fix my family. You know, and looking back now, I don't have anger toward my mother for how she raised me. I really do understand that she was doing the best that she could with the tools that she had.
In her formative years, Nicole had learned that some stories just aren't to be shared with others. Remember that box we spoke about earlier? The one labeled Dad. Well, Nicole was finally ready to integrate it back into her story.
So 16-year-old Nicole did not have a relationship with her father. If I think back, I can picture maybe two or three times throughout my life where I'd spent more than an hour with him. I don't actually even remember who told me. It could have been my brother or my mom. It was just sort of, oh, by the way, your dad has been arrested at Heathrow.
Nicole's dad had been arrested on drug charges in the UK. He had dual citizenship, and he had outstanding warrants in both the UK and South Africa. So after his arrest, when he was given the choice, he opted to be incarcerated in the UK, far away from his family.
That information, as I say, was passed on to me as though it were the most normal thing in the world. And it did feel like, yeah, that tracks. You know, it wasn't like, if I think back on it, it wasn't like, I'm never going to see my dad again. I think that was one of the things that, you know, it was sort of like, you do understand that you're probably never going to see him again in your life. And I sort of just nodded and said, okay, you know. And there was no afterward sort of thought of what this means for my life, probably because he didn't really play a big role in my life. But looking back, and certainly doing what I do now, that should have been huge. That should have been, for any 16-year-old, that should have been a mind-blowing moment followed by probably counseling.
It probably should have. But instead it got boxed and sealed and Nicole just lived with it. No need to share it or integrate it into the fuller story. But it turns out her career in true crime brought her full circle. Because this, all of this, her dad's criminal activity, the violence, the substance abuse she witnessed as a child, it gives her a superpower to do what she does. Empathy. Nicole crafts stories out of true crime because she knows that there's a fine line between being the storyteller or being the story itself. And she decided that that box didn't need to be sealed anymore. That part was allowed to be part of her whole story. So Nicole put the story in the book she wrote with Bryn Hodgkitz called Killer Stories.
Nicole 4 years ago would never have done that because I still had that sort of cloak of shame that children carry around with them when they live in those environments. And I had almost separated who I was then from who I am now and refused to believe that any of that could have influenced what I was doing today. When this book was about to be released, I was terrified that people were going to look at me differently. And the reaction, I mean, some people were surprised, but most people didn't even comment on it. Today, it's almost more of a holistic picture where I can say, okay, actually the fact that my dad was a international drug trafficker and a lifelong criminal and I grew up in all, with all of these abnormal behaviors around me, I can see how that would have made me perhaps interested in the darker side of life. And that's okay.
It is okay. It's all okay. The boxes and their contents, the unpacking and the rewriting of our stories. We are resilient, not because we're untouchable, but because we have the ability to heal and because we can write new stories.
Thing. I actually pulled out my blazer, my high school blazer the other day. It still fits. But the stories that blazer carries don't fit anymore.
Today, Nicole Engelbrecht is affectionately known as the queen of true crime podcasting across South Africa. She's a self-described dog mom, although her cat might disagree. Nicole produces weekly episodes of the multi-award-winning True Crime South Africa podcast in a way that only Nicole can, with empathy. Nicole also works alongside television production companies, researching and developing true crime documentaries, and pioneered the first companion podcast of its kind with Showmax in 2021, the award-winning Devilsdorp, the official companion podcast. If you haven't listened yet, please do. Oh, and as for those neatly compartmentalized boxes, they aren't sealed shut anymore. Go on, subscribe to Something Shifted now and never miss a human-centered story. You can find more episodes and ways to support the podcast at somethingshifted.co.za. And because you've listened all the way to the end, we want to share our Something Shifted soundtrack with you. It's a compilation of songs we've listened to while making this season. Songs that make us feel a little less lonely and a lot more empowered. The link is in the show notes. Enjoy. Many thanks to Rue, my executive producer, for additional writing on this episode. And as always, thank you for listening. Bye.